From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Vlogcast for Monday, December 30th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work. All right, even though it's an abbreviated week, in theory, shoulders back, smile on your face, prayer on your lips, everything is going to be just fine. Now, let's get this thing officially launched with...
The Daily Denogram!
Yeah, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets, you get to make the call. Says here, people say walking on water is a miracle, but to me, walking peacefully on earth is the real miracle. Yeah. People who appear to walk on water just know where the stones are.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
I know.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Exciting.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
All righty.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on that. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1922, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR, was formed. Finally, giving the free world someone we could all beat up on and hate without having it grate on our conscience. I guess the upshot of that is the Beatles wouldn't have had that one hit if it weren't for them. And it was on this day in 1972, President Nixon halted the bombing of North Vietnam and announced peace talks. Yeah, peace talks, I remember those. And just the same, the war continued to drag on for another 3 years.
Most illogical reaction.
Through the fog and the inattention of the holidays, President Trump, or President-elect Trump, you know, you can still call him President Trump because he's a former president. Okay, so President Trump ruffled a few feathers over a couple of issues, one of which I think was probably meant as a joke. The one issue being the annexation of Canada as a 51st state. And some people in the political circles are actually looking at this as a serious consideration. Who wants Canada? Well, a point was made, and I'm trying to remember who it was that made the point, said that, if you were to merge the United States and Canada, you'd have the world's most powerful country. Well, aren't we the world's most powerful country? I mean, that's what I've been hearing all my life. So now that's not true? Is China finally beating us? I don't know. But the other issue is the issue of the Panama Canal. And at first I thought to myself, oh my gosh, is Donald Trump all of a sudden taking an imperialistic view of our role in the world? And then I started reading stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe this guy has a point. Now, he has already, at this point, sparked international debate. And it revolves around the Panama Canal fees. And he's implying that if demands aren't met, the canal will return to U.S. control. And he describes the high Panama Canal tolls as a ripoff. And if Panama doesn't lower its fees, the United States may just reclaim the canal. Well, can we do that? Is that legal? I don't know. But he has sharply criticized Panama's high tolls for using the canal, claiming they unfairly target American naval and merchant vessels. Yeah, well, that's not hard to believe. And according to Donald Trump, the fees, which can reach $500,000 for the largest vessels, are prohibitively expensive. And his criticism is based on the claim that these charges are just downright unreasonable, particularly given the United States' historical generosity to Panama. Apparently, they have a short memory down there. Well, Trump also claims that the costs are unjustified, given the canal's strategic importance to the United States. Now, Trump's response naturally sparked debate about whether the United States should try to reclaim control of the canal. And in this argument, they're citing the 1977 Panama Canal Treaty signed by former President Jimmy Carter. You remember him, the guy to whom everything he touched turned to crap. This nation today would be a much better nation, a much more secure nation, if it hadn't been for the 4 years that Jimmy Carter spent destroying the country. Between him and Barack Obama, oh my God. So anyhow, this treaty effectively transferred canal governance to Panama by the end of 1999. Now, Trump's rhetoric implies that if Panama doesn't change its toll policies, the United States may consider just reclaiming ownership, kind of portraying it as a matter of national interest and fairness. Now, to be sure, the canal's significance extends beyond economic concerns, and it's a major factor in U.S. national security policy. I want to read for you this tweet from Roger Stone. You remember Roger Stone? A bit of an eccentric fellow, but my gosh, politically, he makes so many valid points. And he says here, Presidents Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter foolishly sold the Panama Canal to Panamanian dictator, which would have been, what's his name? the name escapes me right now, but apparently he was Manuel Noriega. There we go. See, the brain cells are still working. And we sold the canal to him for a buck. And now Panama's government is essentially under the control of the CCP, which is true. Now, Ronald Reagan warned us that relinquishing control of it was a mistake. Stone says Trump is right. Take it back. And we may just have to do that. I don't know. Again, I don't know about the legality of it. But Trump expressed concerns about undue foreign influence at the Panama Canal, you know, presumably referring to China. And he cited a Hong Kong-based Chinese company that controls two ports near the Panama Canal. And the suggestion that Panama might not uphold the cooperative and impartial ideals envisioned in the 1977 treaty has resulted in Trump's approach. And his approach is really quite simple, you know, America first. It prioritizes an America first approach to treaty enforcement. America's reliance on the canal, which handles 75% of the country's cargo shipping, makes it an essential passage for commerce and potential naval deployment. Now, again, remember, this was a treaty. This wasn't a real estate sale. This was a treaty. Basically gave the canal to Panama to operate and to profit from, and they're profiting quite handsomely. Now, here's what Trump said. He said it was solely for Panama to manage, not China or anyone else. We would and will never let it fall into the wrong hands. So I'm going to hold him at his word on that one. United States economic and security interests depend very heavily on uninterrupted access to the canal strategic route. Can you imagine if the CCP all of a sudden decided, well, we're just going to cut off the United States from the Panama Canal? Can you imagine the economic impact of that? And let's not forget, the French started to build the canal and they gave up on it. And then the United States went in and resumed work on the canal and finished it. Now, channels like the Panama Canal play an important role in, when you think about it, in terms of annual maritime traffic, it's huge. And it contributes hugely to significant global commerce. You've got 5% of traffic passing through, and Trump's criticism extends to the geopolitical domain. I mean, the man has apparently really thought this through, and this is raising concerns about the risks of foreign entities gaining control of the Panama Canal. Trump regards it as a vital national asset, and it is. So, I don't know. Are we getting ready to stick our face in a fan in this regard? Probably too early at this point to tell, but the historical context exacerbates Trump's grievances. As the canal was a massive American engineering achievement that was heavily financed and maintained for decades. Now, Trump pointed out the disparity between the apparent toll ripoff and the canal's $15.7 billion cost to the U.S. taxpayer, despite the fact that the toll system doesn't provide direct subsidies. You've got signs of widespread disruption affecting canal operations, like the current drought. That's causing inflationary concerns that have to be looked at. So, in another statement, Trump said, our Navy and commerce have been treated in a very unfair and injudicious way. The fees being charged by Panama are ridiculous, especially knowing the extraordinary generosity that's been bestowed to Panama by the U.S. This complete ripoff of our country will immediately stop. Sounds pretty serious to me. So, given the legal complexity surrounding the original treaty, it's actually unclear whether the United States can reassert control. Analysts remain skeptical of the arguments and developments needed to support that kind of a political claim. You know, throws a lot of things into speculation. However, Trump's statements emphasize the importance of transparency and fair dealings. He says, free of undue influence from external parties who may exploit lax policies around the waterway. All great points, but the one thing that we have to bear in mind is the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. They've actually had free rein when it comes to entry into the United States. Nobody is stopping anybody from mainland China from coming into the United States for whatever purposes, to work in a consulate, to spy, industrial espionage. Lord knows there's plenty of that going on. And during this period of 4 years, this nightmare under the Biden administration where our southern border has been wide open, the tens of thousands of military age Chinese males who've come across our border and are wandering around totally undocumented. We know nothing about them. We don't know where they are. They're just wandering around here and are probably easily able to communicate with superiors in China. Who knows? They may already be on some kind of a subversive mission to undermine the operation of the United States. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it must be faced. Our vulnerability right now is probably much higher than it was on 9/11. Think about it. So if China wants to shut down the Panama Canal, they could probably do it. Probably not for long, but they could do it. And the damage between the time they shut that canal down and the time we reopen it, you know, how long will that take? And in that time frame, imagine the economic impact, not just to the United States, but to the entire world. CNN's Scott Jennings just dropped a truth bomb to the left, calling Joe Biden a failed president who's leaving office in disgrace. Now, did we need Scott Jennings to tell us that? No. But I think it's great that it was being said on CNN. In light of Joe Biden telling the New York Times that he doesn't regret debating President Trump, Jennings called him out. He said that Biden's refusal to express regret for the Americans killed during his botched Afghanistan withdrawal was a disgrace, as were other moments of his sham presidency, like pardoning his son, Hunter.
When he got asked about regrets, the fact that he didn't say, I regret that 13 American service members lost their lives in Afghanistan, to me, that he can't muster the courage to say that now is a disgrace. Beyond that, he's leaving office in disgrace. I mean, you know, you got less than 20% of the American people now that think the country is on the right track. That's a lower number than it even was on Election Day. And what's happened since Election Day? He pardoned his son, Hunter. He commuted the sentences of a bunch of evil killer thugs on federal death row. Not all of them, just the ones that he wanted to. Didn't even make a principled stand on that. And then he went on vacation, which is where he is right now. This is a failed, disgraced president. And he has never, ever owned up to what happened in Afghanistan and the role that that played in destroying those families' lives and destroying his own presidency.
Now, Biden has less than a month to go until his one-term presidency ends, and he's feeling reflective, believe it or not. He's voicing some regrets about his decision not to sign his name to COVID relief checks and about his longtime reputation, once considered a virtue, of being the poorest lawmaker in Congress. And now, and poorest, of course, we're not talking about poor in terms of wealth. We're talking about just downright lousy. And now with a planned visit to meet with Pope Francis at the Vatican next month, he's signaling that he may have additional issues on his mind. As you know, Biden is Catholic, so the fact that he's leaving office and then going to visit with the Pope, and this Pope being a socialist, actually, I would allege that this Pope, Pope Francis, is a communist. He was brought up in a communist country. And I'm still trying to figure out how it was that the Vatican voted for this guy, for Pope. It's just beyond me. So the visit, by the way, White House officials claim, as they issued a readout on Biden's call with the Pope last week, is officially to discuss world peace, over which Biden is going to have nothing to say or do, because he'll be out of office. And probably, I don't know, this is just pure speculation on my point, but I think that Biden is probably going to go directly from office into a convalescent home. I mean, the man can't put together a sentence. So according to a person familiar with his plans for the trip, Biden is also going to the Holy See to seek solace and relief as he exits the world stage. Pope Francis, this source said, has become an ally and sounding board, trading occasional phone calls with Biden. And some of those conversations have been casual check-ins of the, hey, how you doing kind of variety. But, you know, this Pope, I don't trust him any farther than I can throw Joe Biden. Joe Biden privately regrets dropping out of this year's presidential election and reportedly is insisting that he could have beaten President-elect Trump if he wasn't pushed out of the race by his own party. Clearly, the man is delusional. Well, Biden and some of his aides have boasted to confidants in recent days that the president should have stayed in the race and could have won a second term. And this is according to a report in the Washington Post that hit the stands on Saturday. And in that report, they're citing multiple anonymous sources briefed on the conversations. Multiple anonymous sources. Here again, that's as good as nothing. All that means is that whoever wrote the story in the Washington Post is pulling the story out of their backside. Now, instead, Biden, who's now 82, buckled to pressure, as you know, by the Democrat Party elites, George Clooney being one of them, back in July. And it wasn't just because of the presidential debate in which Biden did so poorly. I mean, it became so obvious to everybody, the man can't even think. He can't put together a sentence. And that's not a good position for a nation like ours, or any nation for that matter, to be in. And but they're citing poll numbers. Imagine that, citing poor poll numbers, which were very bad. In fact, I think they were unprecedented. So Vice President Harris, of course, replaced Biden. That's the way that's supposed to work. But here again, there was no primary process. She was just installed. She was ordained as the Democrat candidate for president in the 2024 election. Absolutely absurd. So, aides say the president has been careful not to place blame on Harris or her campaign. Again, that's according to the Post. But the president all but admitted during a CBS News Sunday morning interview in August that former House Speaker Pelosi led the charge because Democrats in the House and Senate were worried that he'd drag down their chances of being reelected. And, you know, here again, you don't have to be a journalist. You don't have to be a political science major to understand that that's truly the case. There's no way he would have won. So in September, he told The View, oh boy, there's a great journalistic outlet for you. He told The View that he was confident he would have defeated Trump in November. And of course, a lot of Democrats blame Harris' loss on Biden's insistence not to drop out sooner. And Dick Blumenthal, who's, he's a real dick. Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, told the Washington Post, he said, Biden ran on the promise that he was going to be a transitional president and in effect have one term before handing it off to another generation. I think his running again broke that concept, the conceptual underpinning of the theory that he would end the Trump appeal. He would defeat Trumpism and enable a new era. Well, that's all well and good in theory, I guess. But the truth of the matter is the people of the United States of America wanted Trump. They want this guy in office. They can now see the damage that the Democrats have done, not just during the Biden years, but during all eight of the Obama years. And this is something you never see on the internet, on mainstream media, and you never will. And that is the perhaps even millions of disillusioned Democrat voters who voted for Obama twice and voted for Biden, who now see the picture much more clearly and really want and voted for Donald Trump. I mean, look at Trump's numbers in this election. Far above anything that any of the pollsters were able to speculate. So, some of his closest advisors, without faulting Biden, concede that his old school governing style didn't always mesh with modern politics. But I think more importantly, I don't think it meshed with modern voters. This younger generation. They went into this pretty much with their eyes open. Now, Jake Sullivan, another evil bastard from the Democrat side, he's Biden's national security advisor. He told the Post, he said, the president has been operating on a time horizon measured in decades, while the political cycle is measured in 4 years. There may be some validity to that, but I think it's just Sullivan spewing gas again. Now, in recent weeks, Biden has admitted to some of the gaffes that he's made in office, including that he screwed up during the debate and was stupid for not getting credit by putting his name on the pandemic relief checks. Like, that would have made any difference at all. I mean, come on. And Biden and his aides have also actually conceded the administration could have done a better job lifting American spirits during the pandemic. I don't see that Biden was any better than Obama when it came to speaking about America and the American people. They never spoke about us in an endearing frame of reference. Never once did Obama say that he loved our country. And his actions, of course, became painfully obvious that he truly was working against the country. I mean, the closest he ever came to talking favorably about the United States was that time that the idiot got up to the podium and said, we live in the greatest country in the world, and I want you to join with me as we fundamentally change it. What a stupid statement. So if you really want to analyze what happened with the Democrats, both during the 8 years of Obama and the 4 years of Biden, that pretty much sums it up right there. We live in the greatest country in the world, and I want you to join with me as we fundamentally change it. Now, repeating claims made in the Bob Woodward book, getting back to Biden here, the book is titled War. The Washington Post reported Biden has also been telling confidants that he shouldn't have picked Merrick Garland as attorney general, whining that the Garland, who, by the way, is a U.S. appeals court judge, or was too aggressive in prosecuting his son, Hunter. Really? Come on. Garland was a misfit. He still is. He's criminal. And another complaint was that Garland was apparently too slow for Biden in prosecuting Trump over the January 6th riots. And let me again remind you, those charges were ultimately dismissed because Trump did not incite that riot. Ray Epps might have. A new development in the war in Ukraine, and that is the North Korean soldiers who were sent to aid Russia in that fight are dying in droves. And some of them have even chosen suicide over surrender. You got more than 1,000 North Korean soldiers who were killed fighting in the Kursk region this past week. Almost 10% of its deployment to Russia, by the way, after generals ordered a human wave attack, virtually sending, just basically sending them to their deaths. And the U.S. National Security spokesman, John Kirby, you know him, right? Told reporters Friday, he said it's clear that Russian and North Korean military leaders are treating these troops as expendable and ordering hopeless assaults against Ukrainian defenses. And he says, I hope they're loading up their commanders with a bunch of body bags because they're clearly going to need them. And he said the North Korean troops, which are fighting mainly on foot, are highly indoctrinated, pushing attacks even when it's clear those attacks are futile. To the comedy corner and the return of Rocky Laporte, a very funny guy.
I'm kidding. How you guys doing? You good? Yeah, good. Thanks for coming out. I had a crazy week. I had to go to court. Listen to this. I went to court on a Tuesday. My lawyer don't show up. I end up in front of this judge. I don't know what he's talking about. He goes, do you have counsel? I'm like, I got a stick shift. Can I buy a vowel? He goes, you should buy a thesaurus. I go, they're extinct. Yeah. My whole week was like that. Then I go to the doctor the other day. He's like, how's your hearing? I said, I go to court Tuesday. Yeah. What does he care for? Don't you hate going to the doctor? Like they make you fill out those stupid forms, right? They're like, who should we notify in case of an emergency? I'm like, how about the doctor? How about that? There's a good place to start. And they're like, no, we mean like a parent. And I go, oh, well, they're probably just gonna call the doctor. What are my parents gonna do? Like, Mrs. Laporte, your son's been in an accident. And she's like, oh, give him ice cream. He really likes the ice cream. They're asking my mother for medical advice. Like, she knows what's going on. They go, is he a hemophiliac? She's like, no, we're Italian. That's what they ask you. He goes, you got a big family? I'm like, my dad's kind of fat. Yeah. Where's this going? They actually asked me this one time on a form. It goes, what year did you start high school? I'm like, freshman year. Who starts as a senior? Then they always ask you for a closest living relative. I'm like, from here or my house?
Get on out there and make it a great day. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.